producing, you know, four or five squash, and, you know, that multiplies out pretty to a pretty high level of number of squash, unless you're going to can them or do something with them. If you stagger, you know, plant a dozen this week and plant a dozen, you know, 3 or 4 weeks from now, still have plenty of time for them to come in. But you don't have them all coming in there at one time, and you can't eat but so many fresh squash at a time.
Well, we were
even tomatoes. As much as everybody loves tomatoes, you can't eat but so many tomato sandwiches.
Yeah, we were talking last night about some of the things that we wanted to try to plant, and squash was one of the things that came up, and we have a plenty in the freezer. I think we may try to plant a few zucchini, but if you look after your squash and zucchini, it doesn't take a big amount of plants to more or less have you enough to where you can eat them and enjoy, and then freeze some if you take good care of them. But if you plant a bunch, you're going to most likely end up wasting a big majority of the squash and zucchini, unless, you know, the squash vine borer decides to, you know, take up residence on your garden spot.
It's always one to, and unfortunately, not a whole lot to do about the squash board. It's a moth that lays its eggs right at the base of the plant, and that if the eggs hatch and the board goes right into the plant, it's sort of hard to get that particular insect. You know, putting some insecticide right around the base of the plant is about your only hope to get that particular insect. So you do have to be careful, and, you know, make sure you plant enough to have some of them go down. And the moth for that particular borer is very attractive. It looks more like a wasp than it does a moth, really. But they can be very difficult to control, and it's one of those that there are very few insects or diseases that when somebody calls and says, you know, they looked fine, you know, yesterday, and now they're dead, or they're you know, don't look as good. Usually, there was something there the day before, and you missed it. But the squash borer is one of those that, you know, you probably didn't see it the day before, and all of a sudden, your squash is just wilted because it just takes away the vascular system inside that plant, and it can't take up moisture. And if it can't take up moisture, then it's not going to last very long.
Yeah, it doesn't take the squash vine borer long to kill your, you know, squash plants. So just be persistent. You know, keep an eye on your vegetable garden plants, and, you know, if you can catch something before it comes a problem, you will probably be okay. But if you wait till it's a problem, you may be fighting the battle a little bit too late. Johnny, now, as far as planting sweet corn, when planting sweet corn, have you ever heard more or less a suggested amount of sweet corn to plant, say, for a family of four?
Rob, I'm sure there are documents out there that would give you that, and I guess it would depend on how good of corn eaters you have in the family. But my wife loves corn.
We do too.
You know, you can't hardly plant enough. I have not, to answer the question. I do not have that. Most of the time, corn is going to produce, you know, 1 to 2 ears per stalk. So you can sort of, you know, use that for your base, and then determine, you know, know, how much you want to eat. And again, that's something you'd want to stagger, you know, having all the corn come in at one time. It's nothing like going out and pulling the corn, bringing it, shucking it, and cooking it that same day. That's about as fresh as it gets. As soon as you pick corn, it starts, you know, going to starch. It starts losing its integrity, its goodness, if you will. And so, you know, the fresher or the quicker you can get it in something and cool it down, that'll help, you know, keep it from going to starch
to get so the quickly. To get the field heat out of it. Is that what you...
Get the field heat out, yes, sir. Yep. Yeah. That's what you want to do. And, you know, usually when corn comes to harvest, when you're harvesting corn, usually that's some of the hottest times of the year. So that's a lot of heat in that corn. So if you can get it in an ice slurry, get that field heat out of it, that keeps it from losing some of its... integrity, but it's goodness. It's the integrity is still going to be there, but it's just not as good, not as fresh. It loses it pretty quick.
Well, you know, Johnny, a lot of people enjoy corn on the cob. A lot of people cut it off. Either way, it freezes very well. And this may sound crazy. If I'm going to eat corn on the cob, I like for the kernel to be filled out good. A lot of people doesn't like the kernel to be filled out very much because they like it when it has a lot of milk and stuff in it. But I like for the kernel to be filled out. So when you eat a ear of corn, you know, you know you've had something. But corn can be added into string beans, peas, butter beans, as we call them. Some call them lima beans. But just corn is very versatile, whether it's white or sweet or the bicolor corn. I pretty much enjoy it all. And a lot of times...
You mentioned corn pudding.
Oh, man. Hadn't thought about that in a while. Wow, that's like taking a vegetable and turning it into a dessert, so to speak. And, you know, it's all kind of different varieties of corn out there. But one thing about it, if you do plant sweet corn, you've said many times the ideal scenario is 1 inch of rain per week. But when the corn starts to tasseling, that's one of the most important stages that it needs water, correct?
Yeah. Tasseling and silking, usually occurs about the same time. Pollen's going to be on the tassel, and then the pollen falls down onto the silk of the corn, and that's of course develops the corn ear. But that's a critical time. Temperature and water is critical during that time. I think if it gets much above 90. It doesn't do a great pollinating job. If you get up into the 95 range consistently, while those ears are trying to form, you can run into some pollination issues. But definitely the moisture needs to be pretty steady. You know, you want to keep a pretty consistent moisture when that ear is trying to form. So, you know, if you can irrigate, you know, the drip irrigation is best. If you can, just because it uses most of the water is right there at the root, and that's where you want it. But if you have a large garden, a lot of people set up sprinklers. You're just gonna take some more water to get that out there to get the efficient amount of water, or sufficient, should I say? Sufficient. It's not a very efficient way to get water to it, but you need to make sure you get sufficient amount to the root zone. And also, if you're using sprinklers or using overhead watering, you want to do that in the morning. You want to do that during the morning hours rather than doing it in late evening, because you don't want those leaves to stay wet throughout the night, and that just gives you more fungal issues. You could have more disease problems by leaving that that sprinkler on it during the evening hours, if the leaves don't have time to dry off before it gets dark.
Well, Johnny, are you a fan of these soaker hoses?
I love soaker hoses. Yep, that's the, one of the best way to, one of the better ways to get your water where it needs to be, which is at the root zone. And you know, they're usually fairly inexpensive. You know, just lay that soaker hose down, and it uses, so you know, it doesn't use a lot of water. And it's this very efficient way of doing it. So I'm a very big proponent of soaker hoses. They work very well. Just make sure you have enough pressure to go all the way to the end, because a lot of times your pressure gives out there at the end. But and I think you know about 50 feet at a time is about as far as you can go with them. So that they do have their limitations. You know, you got drip tapes, and you have a little emitters you can put, you know, as well. You know, there's all kinds of irrigation methods, but the soaker hose is about as simple as it gets. If it meets your criteria, now again, you have to be careful with the pressure on that to make sure you have enough pressure to that you're not watering, you know, the first 25, 30 feet of your row, and it's not getting on to the rest of it. So that's a consideration for the soaker hose.
So again, you suggest soaker hose or drip irrigation if possible. That's a more efficient way than using sprinklers, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah. It's not to say sprinklers can't be used. I mean,
I understand.
A lot of people use them, but for the efficiency use of water, it's better. And also, you know, for erosion purposes as well, you know, if you have any runoff at all from that overhead water, you don't usually have any runoff from the soaker hoses or the the emitters or tapes or things like that. But with the overhead water, you could have some runoff, and that would increase your erosion of your garden as well. You don't want to lose that precious topsoil in your garden.
That's right. Well, we need to get a word on for T.G. Brooks Company. Speaking of T.G. Brooks Company, if you're ever in need of a well water pump, they have them, well water wire. And if you're ever in need of some, you know, black pipe to maybe run water to your garden to irrigate it, see them right there at T.G. Brooks Company. 411 Helena Mariah Road.
May is such a beautiful month. May has beautiful weather, full-time lawn, full-time garden season. It's the time to have fun and beautify. T.G. Brooks Company has plants, too, like tomato plants, all of the most popular local varieties. Pepper plants, cantaloupe, plenty of vegetable plants like tomatoes, cucumbers, squash, peppers, watermelon. They have your garden flowers like vinca, begonias, impatiens, hanging baskets. And be sure to get Daddy Pete's manure and soil by the bag. It's very popular and really does the good job for you. Get your garden seed. They're fresh and ready for planting. Reseed your lawn with clean, fresh grass seed, and they have fertilizer and lime. And if you need mulch, they've got it, even the triple ground mulch. Do you need straw or pine needles or potting soil, planting soil, or cow manure? They have spreaders. They have aerators for sale or rent. T.G. Brooks Company serves the homeowner and the commercial landscaper. T.G. Brooks handles everybody with the same courteous service, and they can arrange delivery, or you can pull in with your pickup truck, your trailer. They'll load it up for you. They have bag products. They'll load those in your car or your van. Reminder, they have Bartlett animal feeds. It's so exciting here in May and full-time growing season. Be sure to stop on out at 411 Helena Mariah Road in Timberlake. Phone them at 364-2428 if you've got questions. T.G. Brooks, proudly serving the homeowner, the farmer, and those in construction since way back in 1936. They welcome folks from all over Person County, Rougemont and Northern Durham, and of course, Southern Person County.
We do appreciate the support of T.G. Brooks Company. Johnny, a question for you. If someone wants to plant, per se, a late summer vegetable garden, and if they want to plant that late summer vegetable garden from more or less plants, when is a good time to start those plants from seed?
Well, Rob, great question. It depends on the plant a lot. You know, the squash, your cucumbers, your melons. Trying to think of other vegetables. A lot of those they'll come up. These are larger seeded plants, larger seeded vegetables. You plant them a couple of weeks. Is usually sufficient to get them started and get them big enough to set out. Tomatoes and peppers, even eggplant's a little bit smaller, seeded vegetables, they require a little longer time. Usually with peppers, probably about 8 weeks from seed to transplant. With tomatoes, about 6 weeks from seed to transplant. So depending on the vegetable will depend on how long you need to plant the seed to go to a good size transplant for that plant. But you know, a lot of the larger seeded vegetables will come up pretty quick. And the later in the season, as the soil warms up, really the squash and the cucumbers, even the zucchini squash and the melons, you know, planting them directly into the ground usually works very well, especially if you loosen that ground up. You know, if you have a hard pack, that's going to reduce the seed emergence as well, as well as temperature and moisture, as we talked about earlier. If you get a crust over the ground, but if you have a loose soil, planting those larger seeded vegetables, you know, that right into the ground works well. But if you want to start them from a four pack or a three pack or even a 4-inch pot, you know, you want to give them at least 2 weeks. If you got, and the bigger the container, I mentioned 4-inch pots. If you're going to go from a 4-inch pot into the ground, you probably want to give it, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. But it'll be a larger plant when it goes in, so you know you're not losing any time because that plant's growing the whole time it's in that container. A lot of people like to start out tomatoes in a gallon container. You know, you start them and you plant them early, then move them up to a gallon. When you put them in the ground, I mean, a lot of times they're blooming when you put them in, actually get them into the ground. So you can get a little bit of a head start. But the smaller seeded tomatoes and peppers, you got to give them a little longer lead time. And, you know, tomatoes, so you got some tomatoes that'll mature probably in 52, 55 days. The Early Girl, I believe, is one of the quicker turnarounds. But most of your tomatoes are going to require a 72 to 75 day from seed to harvest, seed to actually making a tomato. So just take your, you know, if you use 1st of October as a guideline and back up how long you have before then, and that would, you know, give you a good idea of when you need to get them in the ground. You know, usually get tomatoes in, you know, by the middle of July, you're still going to be able to make a crop of tomatoes.
Well, I know a lot of people, they typically plant an early garden and then plant a later garden, but I don't know if it's just me, but it just doesn't seem like the later garden sometimes yields the amount as the early garden. Do you agree or disagree with that?
That's exactly right. A lot of times it has to do with the care. You know, if you're growing them commercially and you have, you know, everything set up, if you're growing them on plastic and you've got drip tape under them and you're giving them, you know, everything, then that's, you know, usually you can have a pretty good second crop like that. But in the garden, home garden scenario, that first yield is going to be normally your better. You're competing with a lot more insects and diseases. You know, the longer the season goes on, it's usually hotter and drier when you're starting that second succession crop. So it is, you know, it's a little more work involved. You know, the weeds will take over. Of course, the weeds take over even in the spring. So I don't guess we can say that's any different. But there are some, you know, some obstacles to overcome on that second crop, the success, what they call succession gardening. You usually don't have the yield, as you say. I agree.
We need to get a word on for Jason Aycock Auctioneering. And after the break, can we talk a little bit about Honeybee Johnny?
We can try.
All right, let's get this message on for Jason Aycock Auctioneering. Jason Aycock Auctioneering, NCAL 6679, announces the farm equipment auction for Grover C. Atkins and others to be held Saturday, May 15th at 9 a.m. Sale address, 7278 Ringwood Road in Enfield, North Carolina. For terms, more information, and to view photographs of items up for auction, log on to jasonaycockauctioneering.com. On-site bidding and bidding available through proxy bid. This sale will be held rain or shine. You can call Jason Aycock for more information at 919-495-0285. Tractors, cotton pickers, dozer, combines, sprayers, hay equipment, peanut and cotton equipment. Also, you'll find trucks, trailers, and a camper, and lots more. This sale date again, Saturday, May 15th at 9 a.m., it's the farm equipment auction for G.C. Atkins and others at 7278 Ringwood Road in Enfield, North Carolina. Log on to jasonaycockauctioneering.com for more information or call Jason at 919-495-0285. We do appreciate the support of Jason Aycock Auctioneering. Johnny Coley is our guest today. And, you know, Johnny, I kind of gave you an introduction at the beginning of the show, but I didn't pass along that you are the horticultural agent for Person and Granville County offices of the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service, and my apologies. But you are also a beekeeper, and you was talking earlier about, you know, the pollination of corn, and I've heard you say in the past with cucumbers, sometimes if the cucumbers do not fill out, or maybe at one end of them they may just look deformed or whatever, that sometimes is a pollination issue. Is it safe to say that bees are the best natural pollinator?
It would depend on the crop. you know, for corn, wind is going to be your best pollinator. Bees don't really pollinate corn or any insect. They're mainly by wind. Going into the cucurbits, then bees would be, and not just honeybees. I mean, honeybees is when we think of pollinators, we think of honeybees a lot of times, and they are great pollinators. Don't take me wrong; they are commercially, they are probably the number one pollinator because they can be moved around from field to field. Now, inside the greenhouse, you have different types of bumblebees that they will release inside the commercial greenhouses for greenhouse vegetables, like greenhouse tomatoes, greenhouse cucumbers, things like that. They'll put out the bumblebee. The bumblebee is a good pollinator for tomatoes because of their the way they move. They're more of a buzzing and that vibration on that leaf. The vibration on the bloom really moves that pollen. So depending on the crop, it really does depend on what makes the best pollinator. But bees, honeybees are good. There's a squash, I think it's called a squash bee. It's a type of, if I'm not mistaken, it's a type of bumblebee. There's so many different different types of bees that do a good job of the squash. They'll get down into the squash bloom and do a good job of pollinating that, because the squash, cucurbits in general, they have male flowers and they have female flowers. So you need it to not only go to the male flower to get the pollen, you need it to visit the female flower to deposit that pollen. So it needs to go to both. Honeybees are, they can be moved from field to field, and, it's a big industry. I was just reading, I was just reading an article about a graduate. I think she's a 2015 graduate from NC State that started a business, I think called Bee Downtown, and she has beehives within the city, within different areas of cities, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia to Richmond, Virginia. So she's got a covers of
bees
there, and takes her hives, to different places.
Well. Johnny, you mentioned that, and I know that they have bees over at WRAL TV5, and as most people are aware, bees are very beneficial, honeybees, especially pollinating crops, but they also make and produce honey. Now, is it getting to be about the time to where beekeepers will harvest the honey?
It's a little early yet. We have harvested some honey around the end of May, 1st of June, so it is getting close. Some beekeepers will leave their super zone even longer, and some of them will test the water content, the moisture content in the honey, and if it's too high, they'll leave the supers in a little bit longer for the moisture level to get a little bit less, because if that moisture level is too high when you harvest it and bottle it, it can cause big problems. It can ferment and ruin your honey. So you want that moisture content to be correct when you harvest it. So if you have a lot of rain or humid temperatures during the time you normally harvest, you might want to you might wait. You just want to make sure that that moisture level is correct. But it is. I don't know. I think we've got three hives, and I think two of them swarmed this year, and we did catch one of the swarms. So now we have four hives. But when they split like that, they don't make you as much honey. They don't do as good a job of filling up those supers with honey, so you might get more bees or more hives, but beekeepers have different goals, and honey is one of them, and also some people make it's commercial putting them out for pollinators, so they have a business of actually moving them from field to field, and the farmer may pay them a certain amount to bring them there. So it's different ways to make money with honeybees, but they're a finicky species, trying to figure out just the best way to get the most out of them is always usually a little bit diff- figure out. But yeah, honey, that's one of the best products from the honeybee. I'd say pollination is your best byproduct, because without the pollination from the honeybees, we would be lacking in a lot of good fruit and vegetables.
Right. So if you are someone that buys honey from your local honey producer, if you're thinking that, you know, I need to buy a little bit more honey this year than I did last year, you may want to go ahead and contact your honey supply person and say, hey, is it going to be any way that I can get a couple of more jars of honey this year than I did last year? Because typically, local honey sells out pretty quickly.
Yeah, it does.
We need to get a word on for Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers and Owl Pride Foods, makers of Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip. We'll be back with more Gardener's Corner after these messages. Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers is located 613 Lewis Street in Oxford. Open for business weekdays 8 to 5, Saturdays 9 till 1. Call 1-800-221-9267 or 919-693-4626. Al, Hillary, and Will, there to serve you with all of your golf car needs. They have club car, Easy Go, and Yamaha units. If you're wanting a gasoline or an electric golf car, they have them at Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers. Trojan Batteries, Parts and Repair Service. Thinking about a new grill? Check out the Wilmington Grills at Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers. Speaking of trailers, they have utility, dump, enclosed, stock, and equipment trailers. That's Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers in Oxford, 919-693-4626, toll free 1-800-221-9267. Sandlin Golf Cars and Trailers.
WRXO AM 1430 and WKRX FM 96.7, Roxboro, North Carolina.
Owl Pride Foods, makers of Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip, is made in Roxboro. Pick up some the next time you're shopping at Hurdle Mills Market and Butcher Shop, North Main IGA, Supply Line Discounts in South Boston, Virginia, Food Lion, or Kenyon's Meat Market in Mebane. You can enjoy Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip at Rock City Grill, Cole's Pharmacy, Triss's Espresso, and Clarksville Station. Owl Pride Foods, makers of Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip, remind you that goodness grows in North Carolina. Try the jalapeno added for extra flavor. That's Owl Pride Premium Pimento Cheese Spread and Dip. We do appreciate all of our fine supporting sponsors of the Gardener's Corner. Johnny, we've got about 3 or so minutes left on the program, and I've been asking you question after question. Is it anything that you would like to pass along to the listeners before we leave the airwaves today?
Well, Rob, a couple of things. We sort of touched on, talked about vegetable gardening quite a bit today, and one thing you want to do, again, the cucurbits are probably what I get the most calls on for fungal issues. And the key to controlling fungal issues is getting on them early, spraying early. Once you start seeing the symptoms of fungus in your garden, a lot of times it's too late to get much control on them. Downy mildew is probably your number one culprit for fungal issues in the vegetable garden.